Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Sir Keir Starmer will tell Britons there is light at the end of the tunnel, but they must first join a shared struggle through tough short-term pressures. In his first Labour Party conference speech as Prime Minister, Sir Keir will say he wants to build a new Britain with faster economic growth, shorter hospital waiting lists and safer streets. Lebanon's seen its deadliest day of the conflict with Israel since 2006, with almost 500 killed in strikes on Monday. But the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu put out a message urging civilians to move to safety.
Hezbollah has been using you as human shields. It placed rockets in your living rooms and missiles in your garage. Those rockets and missiles are aimed directly at our cities, directly at our citizens.
A new report has found an increasing number of young people in England are reaching crisis points and being admitted to hospital for their mental health. The Education Policy Institute also found there's an imbalance of support available. And Man City midfielder Rodri could be out for the rest of the season. The 28-year-old suffered a knee injury during Sunday's 2-2 draw with Arsenal. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Phil Towers.
What can I say, Dave? I owe you everything. I've never trusted anyone like this. I love you, man.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Your new boiler's fitted and good to go.
Need a trusted boiler installer? Buy yours from Scottish Gas. And you can count on our Which accredited traders to install it stress-free. Plus, get up to 3 years interest-free credit. Search Scottish Gas new boiler to find out more. Scottish Gas acts as a credit broker, not a lender. Availability of credit depends on your status and credit chance.
Coming up, Africa in Focus.
You might want to step back from your speaker or remove your headphones.
Yes! I can't! I just can't believe it!
Mark's found out he's won £11.4 million on Lotto.
This is just... You know what? I've got tears in my eyes.
Yep, that's £11.4 million. Lotto, will you be the next millionaire? The National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus.
Colorful
Radio.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Or even good evening, depending on the time zone that you are connecting to us from. Welcome to Africa in Focus. I'm your host, Julius Baluto. It's another great Tuesday. And of course, we are coming to you from the heart of London to wherever you are on Colorful Radio. It's on that series of Kane Prize for African Writing happening. So we are talking to our great writers from Africa. And this time round, we are happy and honored to host Pemi Agunda. Pemi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Julius.
Yeah, that's great. So introduce yourself and better than I have and just about basically what you are doing right now to our listeners.
So my name is Pemi Agunda. I'm from Lagos, Nigeria, and I write fiction. My first book, Ghost Road, it's a collection of short stories, just came out in May and June of this year. Yeah, that's about it.
Oh, that's great. You realize that you need to, we shall talk a lot more. We have time to. So... I wanted you to paint us a picture of Lagos. How is it right now? Are you in Lagos or are you in US?
I'm in the US right now. Yes.
Right. Great. 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 So, what are your memories of Lagos when you last visited?
Well, I was in Lagos in July, so it hasn't been that long ago. I spent all of July in Lagos. It was wonderful. I got to spend time with family and friends. I had a couple of book events, so that was lovely too. Yeah, Lagos is still Lagos. There's still traffic. It's still hot, but it's always good to be home.
When I landed Lagos, I saw a lot of cars with the yellow color. And I was like, why does the Nigerian flag have green? There's too much yellow around. But it's a nice city. I love it. And it's great city, which is really cool. And that long bridge, they were telling me it was the longest in Africa, but I didn't have time to measure or establish. But it's lovely. Just that small, long, long bridge that you drive over in Lagos.
Yeah, that's a Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah.
I don't think it's still the longest, but at some point it used to be the longest bridge.
Used to be, really, see? I was so happy to be there. I was saying, yeah, look, this is Africa. I love it. It's lovely.
When did you visit?
I stayed in Lekki when I was there. That was 2018. It was actually either 2018 or 2015. It was during campaign period that time.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, okay. So we had all these billboards on roundabouts of the road, billboards everywhere, on trees, lots of advertisement of political vegans. It is, you know, all across you went. We were there, so it was amazing. But there you go. There you have it. Then now it's US right now. What time is it? I've been coming to nighttime, but it could be daytime, the state you are in the US.
It is. It's 1:30 p.m. Wow.
Yeah. All right. Let's see how different is it. So as compared to the, in terms of weather, it's not very cold, is it?
Not right now, no. We're just coming off the end of summer, I think. Things have started to cool.
Yeah,
which is nice. So it's nice to take long walks because you're not sweating the whole time.
And as a writer, you get your creativity boosted when you're walking around, isn't it? So it's cool, isn't it?
Yes, sometimes, yes.
Great, great. Well, let's talk about then your writing. When you started the first time, what was the inspiration? And that was it.
The first time I wrote, I don't remember the first time I wrote. I'm one of those boring people who started writing when they were really young. So there's actually a novel that I wrote when I was 10.
Wow.
Yeah, that I illustrated. My parents still have it. So I think that's the first full, in quotes, full-length thing that I remember writing. But I don't remember the feelings involved because that was just so long ago. But I've always been interested in writing, and I would write to entertain my friends and family.
Yeah, great. And how was it received by your family immediately?
Oh, no, they loved it. I think a particular aunt of mine, Ngozi, she was the one maybe who was the most supportive. So whenever I wrote something, she was the first person I ran to give it to. Like, auntie, look at what I wrote. She was studying English at the University of Lagos, so she was a big reader. And she lived with us for a while. So just having that model of somebody who was interested in literature, I think was giving me permission in ways that I wasn't aware of at the time.
Did you have to read a lot of books that inspired you as well?
I read a lot when I was younger. When I was younger, I was more interested in books about adventure and mystery. So, the Enid Blyton books, you know, Secret Seven, Famous Five, Mallory Towers, those kind of books. And then as I grew older, obviously that changed.
Yeah, sometime years back, there was a generation of writers, especially in the UK. They will write a series of books. Like in the UK, we used to have a writer known as James Hadley Chase, and he kept on writing series of books. And I remember when I was young, I was one of the great fans. I'll keep reading and following and hoping when will the next one come out. And it was extremely descriptive. And I was shocked when I came to London the first time. Some places that were in my mind, they became life because I had read them in his novels. So he would paint a picture of a place in London, and in reality, it was just like that. So it was amazing that this series they used to write that time. With African writers, I used to enjoy reading lots of books as well. So when it comes to inspiration as well, I know you're US based. Have you come across a lot of some books by African writers of, those who came before us?
Oh yeah, I mean, I grew up in Lagos, so being in the US is very is relatively recent for me. So I don't think it has necessarily dictated my reading habits. I still read the same way that I read when I was in Lagos. And yeah, when I was younger, I was fascinated by Sefi Atta, Ngugi Wa Thiong'o, Chimamanda. I loved the purple hibiscus when I was younger. Yeah, there are many of them.
Yeah, like you, Professor Ngugi Wa Thiong'o is still US based. He was US based, and yeah, his books as well. Amazing. I read some of them. I had the chance to interview him once, which was amazing. Seeing the real character I looked up to when I was small and reading his books when I was young. So it's amazing. So when it comes to Africa literature, and you look back now, since you were young and even up to now, and you're just focusing on Africa literature, do you think it's changed? And if you assess it and in a continuous way, when you were young up to now, and of course, writers are ahead of us, they were churning out all these different cultural productions and all that. But today also, when you look at it, it's a bit different. What changes do you notice?
I think the biggest change is variety, in the sense that maybe when I was younger, the books I was reading were all of a certain kind, like very literary, very grounded in realism. And now we have just so many genres coming out of Africa. There's like crime, there's mystery, there's romance, there's yeah, stories about like queer lives. So I think that's maybe the biggest thing for me is that there's a whole host, like anything you want. When I was younger, it felt like people were writing only about, for if I were to speak in specific about Nigeria, people were, writing either about like Lagos and maybe specific other places. But I just finished reading a book that's set in Otsuka and about, a gay man. And that's something I wouldn't have seen in the world 20 years ago.
Colorful,
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 colorful
radio. Colorful,
colorful,
genius,
colorful,
colorful,
colorful
colorful radio.
radio.
So, in essence, modernity has influenced writers' thinking from that assessment.
Well, writers are reflecting the world they live in. So if that's what you mean, then yes.
And, yeah, you're right. They mirror the society. And the changes that happen. So right, let's just maybe if we go back to the time of Wole Soyinka, people like Chinua Achebe, he was writing the novel Things Fall Apart, for example. He was focusing a lot more on the political reality of the time or of his time. And if you were to compare that time and you pick up different other things, it tends to be a lot of writers were like that time they were focusing on the regime and what was happening, whether it was dictatorship being translated in writing and represented in a different way. For example, in the novel, the Things Fall Apart, the iconic phrase is all about the same what we deem as the sender, and the sender is political. And when that sender doesn't hold, things fall apart. If would you compare that to like today's political reality in the country with maybe other writers, what's happening? Do you think the writers today focus more a bit more on the political reality or cultural reality from your own assessment and your own writing as well? What we focus a lot more on, the thematic arrangement there?
That's an interesting question. I think that these things can't be separated. And so sometimes some people might describe my work as domestic fiction, in quotes, because I'm writing about the everyday lives of women and men and children. But you can't separate that from the culture and the political temperature of, you know, wherever they live in. These things can't be separated. And so even if people are not writing very specifically about, you know, the government, and there are people who are, you know, but if somebody were to read my work, they might not think it was political, but it is, because nothing exists in a vacuum and everything is influenced by the context. And so the way a woman might be free or constrained in her household is directly influenced by the larger world of the society that that household exists in. I'm not sure if that answered your question.
I like that. In the US, you came back from commemorating the 60 years of Martin Luther King, and this I Have a Dream narrative. When it all started, I think he was once challenged, according to history, while focused on getting his followers political, where can he just preach them the word of God and stick to that? And I know you have seen his answer. It was like, you cannot compartmentalize a human being. From where the politics go to where the word of God go, because the same human being who goes through political oppression is the same one who goes to church to hear the word of God. What do you make of all this, like, remembrance of him? And as a writer, what does that tell us, maybe?
I mean, like I just said, it's true. I agree. You can't separate... you can't compartmentalize in that way. But also as a writer, it would be silly, I think, not to pay attention to what's going on politically, because, you know, you might wake up one day and the government might decide that your book is not worthy and then it's off the shelves, you know. So it's not only in the writing of the work, but what happens to the life of a book afterwards, because if somebody is not happy with the content of your book, and if they have that power, then it can just be banned, you know. In the US, September is like banned book month. And I've been seeing a lot of libraries just showcase the books that in some states have been banned for their content. And some of it is just about, you know, talking about race. Others are about like queerness. And so if those writers had said they were not interested in politics, now politics would have come to their door. So truly, I don't think you can separate any of these things.
Yeah, that's great. That sounds great to me. So, okay, right. Let's focus on your own writing. So far, yeah, the most important, congrats for where you are and for being nominated on the Kane Prize for Africa Writing. Congrats. It shows or illustrates the amount of work you put in it. What's your reaction right now? Because if I were you, I'd be running around in the house drinking the best coffee. Your celebration. Well, pardon my way of celebration.
I don't drink coffee, so I can't celebrate that way. But yeah. I'm happy. I feel very honored to be on this shortlist, especially because it's such a good shortlist, you know. I was aware of at least three other writers' works on the shortlist, and I love their work. And my friend is one of the shortlisted people, Uche. We met at a workshop in 2011, so it just feels very good to be on this, to be, you know, celebrated at the same time as her. And especially because we've been following the shortlist for many years. I remember in the early 2010s, my friends and I would all read the shortlist and then talk about it. Like, what do you think? Who do you think is going to win? You know, we would have all these conversations. So it feels very nice that it feels like it's our turn now. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. How about the work? Could you just chat about this particular piece of work that got you nominated? A bit more focus on it.
Yeah. What do you want to know?
The title, the choice. What is
Oh,
it
I
all
see.
about?
So the story on the shortlist is Breast Milk, and it's about a woman who, can I spoil it?
Yeah, it should be fine, I think.
Okay. It's about a woman who is struggling to produce breast milk, and she thinks it might be directly connected to the time that her husband was unfaithful to her just before she got pregnant. And in the world of the story, her mother is this very feminist person who believes that, you know, women should walk away when something like that happens. And the woman is is struggling to come to terms with who she is versus who her mother wants her to be, versus who she herself wants to be. And the story is thinking about just themes about what we inherit, what we unintentionally pass down. Yeah, that's the story. I think I was talking yesterday to a new friend about how I had attended a lecture by the anthropologist Ruth Behar back in, I think, 2018, where she talked about visiting a village either in Cuba or somewhere, where she met a woman in a village who said that all her five babies had died because there was too much rage in her breast milk. There was too much anger in her breast milk. And that image kind of stuck in my head. The idea that our we like, you know, we pass down more than just genes and body shape and things like that, but like our emotions can harm the people who come after us, you know, that way. So that was the seed idea for the story.
Wow, that's amazing. I tell you, it's a very good reminder. We when I was into screen acting in Kenya, and we did a play that was known as Clean Hands. And you make me remember there's one line we used to quote that we were which was very iconic in the whole production. We used to say, as long as you live, keep your hands clean. Poison doesn't stop to kill just because you took it for the first time in your life. So that connects very well in what you're saying, that image of yes, what can we pass on to the next generation, and especially a mother and all that. And it sounds very amazing. I quite like that way of thinking. I can't wait to read it myself. So it's great work. It's great work. Did it take you very long to compile, to research?
So I'm not a mother myself, and
Yes.
so I thought it was important that I talk to a few mothers in my life, just like ask them questions about, you know, what that process was like, not just the birthing, but you know, especially in terms of breastfeeding. At what point do people start to worry? What are some things that they, what are some just embodied experiences that they had while they were pregnant? One of my friends talked to me about how she did not feel like she owned herself when she was in the hospital because there was a way the, you know, the nurses, but also her extended family were, you know, reaching for her as if she was just, you know, a body there as opposed to being a person. So there was all of that research that happened. I think it probably took me a year to draft the story. That is from the very first draft to the version that I, you know, the story was published in One Story magazine, maybe in 2000 and I don't know if it was 19 or 20, but the editor also did some work on it. So even after I submitted, that was not the end of the process.
And of course, your work has been featured elsewhere. Would you kindly share that as well with us?
Elsewhere? What do you mean?
As in terms of that's being published. Was that the only place? Or
you mean this particular story or my other work?
No, your other work I'm talking about.
I don't know if I remember everything, but most recent thing is probably I was lucky to be in the O. Henry Prize collection in 2022 and 2023, chosen by Valeria Luiselli and then Lauren Groff. So those are some recent publications, but you know, I have a story in Granta, have a story in Ziziva, in Zoetrope. Yeah, some literary magazines have my stories in them.
This is Colorful Radio.
Colorful
Radio.
That's great. That's great. There you are again. You see, when you talk about what your piece of work, the latest one, coming into women choices, the choices they can make, it's also probably catching up with the choices that are made for us. African parents ever come across even knowing how they have to push you. They say, I cannot accept to die without seeing my grandchildren. And that moment, you're not ready to get married. Mm-hmm. But the pressure, yeah, when it comes to choices of what you're going to do for your living, what kind of job you're going to do, and come across with those, some parents, like, we have to have an engineer in the family. We have to have a lawyer in the family. And all these things, they keep going, creeping in the choices we make. Because apparently we come from a family, and there's a family way, and there's your way as an individual. Have you seen that interaction with maybe characters that are familiar to you, away from the one that you created?
You mean, are there any other characters in my work who experience this pressure?
Yeah, or even seen happening in the society.
Or in the real life?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes. I grew up in Lagos, and, you know, once me and my friend hit, like, our 20s, then we started hearing these questions a lot, like, when will you settle down, when will you have children? And unfortunately, it's a thing that still comes up once in a while.
Amazing. So when we're done with this piece of work, what next? Of course, and perhaps something I'm talking about in reflection to writing. It's you have other bigger project I don't want to preempt, mm-hmm. or maybe other areas to venture into, in terms of the themes that you pursue.
Yeah. So my story collection came out in 3 months ago. And I'm currently working on a novel, and some of the themes that we're talking about are also explored in the novel. So, you know, motherhood, daughterhood, and the city of Lagos features very heavily in that too. Just like, who belongs in the city, and at what cost will we try to belong in the city of Lagos? Yeah.
Yeah, so that's great.
Very hard, but I'm working on it right now.
No, it's great. And of course, we wish you all the best. There in the US, is election time, and you can see the themes that keep coming. It's a Democrat, this is what they represent. Republican, the Donald Trump Club, also, this is what they represent. But what we call choice, especially women choice, has not left the news headlines. and of course, sometimes people say, when the US, when the Western world countries in the Western Hemisphere cough. Africa catches the cold.
Mm.
So what do you make of all these, especially embassies on women choice, whatever that translates into politics, whether freedom to choose abortion or no abortion, all these issues that are coming, inclusion, whatever, lifestyle choices as well.
I'm trying to figure out the question to answer. But obviously, I believe in women's rights to do with them with their bodies what they want. And I don't know, it's different living in the US versus living at home, just in the sense that sometimes when I go home, some of the conversations that seem to have started from here feel abstracted in a way that I can't relate to because I'm here and I see things on the ground. But if it's a way for a conversation to open up and for people to question their prejudices or things that they have accepted as normal, but maybe shouldn't be, then I welcome those conversations, you know?
Yeah. That's correct. When we had sometime years back, when in Africa multipartism, before you know that, most countries in Africa were governed by one party rule. So each country had just one political party that was legal party. So you could not form any other political party. That was the issue in African countries for some time. But then it came that time they embraced multi-party democracy, which means they opened their politics, whereby now you could form more than one party. And all that going on, I just wanted to bring a case study point in there, and this is in Zambia. After their first Kenneth Kaunda, having been the founding father, when it came to multi-party politics, he saw the president who came after him, because of political competition, declaring him that he was never Zambian. He was Malawian. For political reasons, that was the case. Hence denying him even to fight for presidency, which was amazing. We get to hear all these narratives in the US. There you have it, Donald Trump with Obama and the birth certificate issue. Now we have seen with Kamala Harris, him coming talking about Kamala Harris, all these funny things. She was Indian, now she's black. All these things are happening right in front of our eyes. This form of political realities, whether it's Africa or US, do you think maybe they're affecting or changing our society? And as a writer, probably, how should we embrace such? I hope it's not a difficult question. like politics, but
oh no, I'm just trying to. I'm thinking.
Yeah, sure.
As somebody who grew up in Lagos, even though my parents are from outside Lagos, my dad is from Ekiti, my mom is from Ondo, but I grew up in Lagos, and it's Lagos, that I've known my whole life. And it would be sad if somebody walked up to me and told me that I did not belong to Lagos because my parents were from somewhere else. I think that we should maybe welcome people's multiplicities as opposed to trying to stick them in particular boxes, because multiplicity is what would benefit most people. Let's figure out the places where we overlap, and beyond that, just embrace people's otherness as opposed to trying to say you don't belong here because you're from somewhere else. Eventually, what does it matter to you? And why is that the thing that people are hung up on as opposed to their policies, you know?
Indeed, indeed. And even in the African context, it's also about more about tribalism, which becomes a point of focus. And you come to Kenya, you become Kikuyu instead of Luo. You go to Rwanda, you become Tutsi instead of Hutu. You come to Nigeria, it matters whether you are Igbo or Yoruba. And all these political point of prejudices. Pay me, look, Africa, 2,000 languages spoken over, each language constituting a particular different culture and a way of life of many people. It's just a shared norm and value. That could mean one tribe or one language is more than 5 million people, which is a lot of people. So when you look into all this diversity, all these wonderful languages spoken, I think Africa is the richest when it comes to wealth in terms of languages, wealth in terms of culture. All of these, what should we do with that? Should we focus on the political narrative whereby we push them at the back burner, or we use them when it matters? Like when I'm a criminal and I'm in trouble, I start to tell my followers politically, we are being finished as a tribe. And if I'm a thief, I did not steal with my tribe. But when it comes like I need to be caught and prosecuted, we begin to scream, our tribe is being finished politically. So what does all this mean to there on our landscape and on the ground in Africa? And how should we perhaps use that?
Those seem like very particular. Like, what did something happen? Wait, did something happen where you are that for this question?
Forgive my passion.
Where it's coming from somewhere. I'm just curious about the context.
No.
Those
Look, in the
examples seem
UK,
very.
right? In the UK, we had all these amazing, not really amazing, these protests about racism and all. But it got me thinking. Tribalism is better than racism. Can you imagine me thinking that way? Why? Because when it's tribalism and it's on the African soil, and if you don't speak, no one will have any issue with you because they don't know which language you're going to speak. But racism is fair, straightforward. It's all about the color of your skin and all that. But, right. Probably you see me a bit passionate about this. It's just because I hate discrimination with a passion. I'm one person who believes we should all be happy living in the same world, being happy to cope, embracing our differences. That's where I come from. I'm a bit passionate on that one.
This is Colorful Radio. Colorful,
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 genius. Colorful
Radio.
Radio.
I mean, yeah, I'm with you. I also hate discrimination. So there's that. It's very sad the way that it plays out on the continent. And it's interesting that it always comes up in specific when it's time for. You know, there's time for an election, and then suddenly people, it's people only wield it when it's going to give them some advantage, which then makes you wonder about where it's coming from, like what the roots are, if you're only wielding this difference when it's supposed to be to your advantage. Yeah, it's sad. I don't know what else to say about that.
No. I thought sometimes, yeah, it's a reality, yeah, of life. Politics is a reality, and we cannot try to ignore it. It creates our realities in life, all the laws that we have to follow and everything. Yeah, but away from that, because that's not the main issue anyway. You're writing. Are there themes that you haven't explored yet? And on that one as well, you could perhaps talk to us about the impact of your latest work or even before. How was it received?
How was my latest work received? I think I've been lucky. It's been received well, both here and at home. And I was, in Lagos in July. I went to Abuja. I got to see readers who have been following my work long before it was, packaged in a book, because I used to write really short stories on the internet when I was like 21, like 10, 12 years ago. So long before the formal book, people were reading my work. So it's very, in a way, this feels like a gift back to the people who've been supporting me for so long. Like, here's a book, here is the embodiment of this work from over a decade, In terms of themes, yeah, there's so much more that I'd like to explore in my work, and I hope that I get the time and space to actually do that. I'm interested in writing about, I went to a private university in Nigeria. I'm interested in writing about that experience. My current novel that I'm working on is interested in urban design and just, how to build a city and the way that how a city is laid out affects people's lives. So these are some of the themes that I am currently working through, and I hope, I think because I'm still interested in familial relationships, like mother-daughter stuff will probably never go away from my work, but I hope that I find new and interesting ways of approaching these topics.
Africanism in the context of writing. Do you think we are doing enough as African writers? Or do you think maybe we could come together a lot more writers from across Africa? And write books are books, they cut across those boundaries. You see, some of my favorite writers don't have to be from my country. The same for you. So do you think in terms of Pan-Africanism, pushing that African agenda, writers from Africa needs to come up together a lot more and maybe mentor the future generation of writers?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't, it's hard. It's something I want. I want to be able to be in community with writers from all over the continent. However, whatever that looks like, if it's like book festivals or just like conversations and things like that. But I also don't know if it's on the writers to make that work. I wish that we had. This is what we're talking about politics too. Like, why is travel within the continent so expensive? Why is it cheaper to go to Chicago than to go to, I don't know, Senegal or something? So we can't separate our desires from just the climate of everything, or the economics of the continent and all the other things that happen. But yes, it would be wonderful if we could. I was just in a conversation with a Kenyan author the other day. That was delightful. I'd love for more opportunities for us to, get together and see what comes of that. Even in terms of translation, I'd love the continent to be at a point where we can have like a thriving, like that where it makes sense economically for there to be more books in translation.
I'm up here talking about translation because a lot more people live in the village as compared to those who live in the cities. Sometimes also those who live in the villages, they tend to speak more of the African languages, and those who are living in urban places, and perhaps that translation is key. And maybe we get authors who are writing also in their own languages to think all this wealth of rich languages and cultures. Do you think we should also not shy away from writing in our own languages? What's your opinion on that?
Oh, absolutely. If it's something you can do, then why not? A lot of my favorite books are in translation, and that's just around the world. They translate from a different language to English, which is what I primarily work in. And so it would be wonderful if we had more people writing. Obviously, there's a conversation about economics, about who's buying books and how that's process can be sustained. But then maybe this is where, I don't know, grants from the government or things like that can start to, can be the leg in into those industries. Yes, I think I do know several people who are interested in writing in their, you know, their mother tongues, but it's a thing of economics about being practical. Like, who will publish this? Will there be big enough readership to sustain printing books? You know, there are all these bigger questions that we have to answer also.
I don't agree. And courage also, and staying to reflect who we are. I quite like Nigerian people because they didn't even have to worry about the world talking about you speak language with a Nigerian accent and all that. No, they stuck to pidgin English. Until BBC decided we can't beat them, we join them. And they started to broadcast in pidgin English. So that's one measure I was happy to see. Proud of who you are. Stay who you are. It's not for you to change for the world. In some cases, the world needs to change for you. Yeah. What do you take on that? I thought it was a unique moment.
Yes, I'm happy BBC Pidgin exists. But like going back to the talking about like economics, like it is the BBC, so they can afford to put their weight and resources behind that project, whereas it might be harder for somebody who is not affiliated with some grand institution to carry on a project like that.
But when we come together?
When we come together, power. Yes, absolutely. I'm with you.
Yeah, it's doable. When we come together, we write books and we get the English to translate from Yoruba to English for them to understand what we are saying. Or even any other language in African continent. It's amazing. And you know Professor Gugi Wadiongo, that's, you mentioned him. It's he was a big advocate of writing in your own languages. He, for example, he wrote in his own native Kikuyu language, and his books are to be translated.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so that's great. That's great to see. That's great to see. So what do you want to encourage us with when, there you are, someone like me who wishes one day I'll be nominated at the Kane Prize for African Writing? What will you tell me to do differently away from drinking my coffee?
Well, apart from drinking your coffee, actually, right? I don't know about doing differently because I don't know where people are. Sometimes these things are up to luck, you know. Sometimes the fact that somebody is not on the shortlist doesn't mean that they are not doing excellent work. We have to remember that prizes are very subjective. It depends on, you know, the year. It depends on the judges. It depends on, there are just so many things that go into deciding who should be awarded what. And so I think maybe the first thing would be telling people not to, it would be nice, but it's not a must have. And they should just maybe focus on writing the best work, the most fulfilling work that they can. And then once you've done the work, like let the world do the rest, you know?
Good advice there. Good advice there. So at least you're saying there's hope for me.
Yes, if that's what you want, then yes.
I like to grab those moments of blessing and luck. Say, it's right. For me.
You write fiction.
Yeah. I'm working on some book right now, actually. Yeah. But I love poetry also. I'm working on a poetry book at the same time. So slowly, I'll get there someday.
Giving you.
Yeah, but it's been great talking to you and you giving us your time. I can only wish you all the best and we'll meet again. This is not the first and the last.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Julius. Thank you for
having me. Yes, and all the best.
This is Colourful Radio.
Hell yeah. gutter, born to a single mother, an anomaly. She prayed no one could ever bring harm by stopping me. We suffered through tears and years of having nothing, till I got wise and opened up my eyes and made something. Some on the sidelines like, well, she getting over. Marble from vinyl tile, Jaguars from Novas. So now I live the life that most don't even know her. Flying high, and some of y'all still dusting off your shoulders. They sit and wonder why, trying to understand 5,000 square feet from a pork and a bean can. New York is the key, man, where I used to see scams. I'm quick to peep whether he's an op or a weed man. They got us caught in a maze, keep us busy to the grave with what we crave, that entertainment craze. I was one of them, locked in the devil's den. Now I'm free to speak the truth and it ain't no settling.
Sometimes running, sometimes falling, sometimes fighting, sometimes crawling. A thousand miles of life and I'm still going. I thank God that I'm still growing. Yeah.
My mama quoted, really didn't go unnoticed. God heard and then he spoke this. Drop everything and get devoted, or what you gain, you will blow it. You'll never reap what you sow unless in fact you'll be demoted. You're the light because I made you. Never be afraid to stand tall against them all and protect what I gave you. Never mimic what you see. All them gimmicks come for free. And the cynics will look to me and bow with all apologies for treating you as less. But at that point you were a mess. How could they have treated you better? Not even you knew you were blessed. And with that I understand, God, I surrender. Render to your plan. I'll never second guess your first word when it's your voice that I heard. Never mind, man. If they're not in your will, then will them away from me. I'm doing the best that I can. And here as I stand, I know that I am absolutely nothing without you.
Sometimes running, sometimes falling, sometimes fighting, sometimes crawling. A thousand miles of life and I'm still going. I thank God that I'm still growing.
Yeah.
On my warfare, mighty through God. I used to be a doubter, now I pray louder, shouting unto God with a voice of triumph. You got me singing.
Sometimes running, sometimes falling, sometimes fighting, sometimes crawling. A thousand miles of life and I'm still going. I thank God that I'm still growing.
Yeah.
Man. myself.